The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, for reflections today, I'd like to share some thoughts about trust, As I was alluding to trust in the meditation, dropping it in here and there, trust, the sense of trust that can be so supportive for our practice, for our life, for our humanity, for the way we show up, who we are in the world, supporting ourselves and others. So trust. The word in Pali is sada, sada. Often transliterated or written as S-A-D-D-H-A. Sada, sada, sada. Beautiful word. Literally means to place our heart upon, to place our heart upon. So sada, it's not an intellectual endeavor to place our heart upon something, to give our heart to something, to trust in it, to give our heart to it. It's also sada translated often, not just as trust, but also faith or confidence or even inspiration. For some, they arrive in the practice of meditation, mindfulness, Buddhism, turning away from faith, perhaps, from this idea of faith or blind faith that's requested in theistic religions, that you have to believe in something before you can be part of the practices. So for some people that resonates, so they come to this practice from an intellectual place perhaps, and that's okay, or from a place of suffering perhaps, but not wanting to have faith, place faith in something. It just seems too much, and some people in fact turn away, like faith again in Buddhism, faith, wait, I thought I got away from that. So you might resonate with that or not. For some people, trust in the divine is not in opposition to this practice. There are many practitioners of other theistic religions and faiths who also practice mindfulness, Buddhism, etc. And there is no opposition to trust in the divine, and also have trust in the Buddha, Sangha, Dharma, a Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, as I'll talk about it in a bit. So, and yeah, there's no issue. There's no opposition. Yet, some others, after practicing in this tradition, they actually open up to more divinity and to the sacred through this practice, as many of us might feel into, touch into, experience something that's quite profound and unfathomable in our own first person experience. So we might feel opening up to a dimension of sacred or divinity without putting it in a box, not letting it be in a box. Wherever, whatever you resonate with or not, and maybe having curiosity about what your resonance is with perhaps the terms as I've introduced them so far: trust, faith, confidence, inspiration, different nuances of this word sadha, of this word sadha. So what is surely true and prominent in this path that we practice together is, as the Buddha has said, ehi pasiko, come and see for yourself. Come and see for yourself. You don't have to sign up to anything at the beginning. You just come and see for yourself. If it works for you, great. And if it doesn't, great. It's come and see for yourself. So in many ways, this practice, still the tickle in the throat is here. Hold on one sec. Okay, let's try that again. All right, I think it's going to come and go. I trust it will be okay, and we'll see. So, ehi pasiko, come and see for yourself. So, there is a sense of, you know, there needs to be still, even with that, come and see for yourself. There needs to be some sort of trust, some level of faith, some level of trust. But okay, I'm going to give myself to it, because even if we, you know, if we come to it with the invitation of ehi pasiko, if we come to it, but we're just apprehensive, we're not giving our heart to it, it may not work. We need to give our hearts to it, trust it, at least for a certain amount of time. And then if it's working, great. If it's not, then it's not working for you. But if we're checking our watch every 5 minutes, okay, is it working? Is it working? Do I have more ease, freedom? Am I enlightened yet? Oh, I must be enlightened. You know, just if there's not a sense of trust, giving yourself to this practice with humility, it probably won't work. So there needs to be that sense of trust or faith. And it could be borrowed trust. It could be borrowed trust or bright trust. They're different. Borrowed or bright trust before it becomes verified trust. And then as it moves to unshakable trust. So it often starts with bright trust. We see someone, who's different, who's acting in a way we want to be in the world or act, or they have more freedom, they have more ease. So that sense of brightness of the trust, there's a sense of brightness there. I'm attracted to this. There is something that inspires me. There's something that's inspiring my trust. Ah. And then there can be borrowed trust, which can be similar to bright trust in that you're borrowing trust from what you're witnessing in another person. And I often actually work with borrowed trust in practice meetings with students, where I can see their capacity, I can see their beauty, I can see their goodness. And when they are hesitant and then they say, well, I don't know about this, and I say, okay, I have full trust in you. I fully trust you. With this practice, with this invitation, with what you're about to undertake. Is it okay if I hold it for you? And for you to have borrowed trust, to have the trust that I have in you, to borrow from that for now, until you see for yourself and it becomes verified trust, because then after a while, it feels like, wait, this thing works. This thing works. Oh, there is. So it becomes verified. It's not bright or borrowed anymore. It becomes verified. Yes, you realize, you look back perhaps in your life and see, again, it's practices like stock market. Don't check on it every single day or every single hour, but look at it long term. If you've been practicing for weeks and months, look at months or even years. Consider some areas of your life where you used to be very upset, anxious, et cetera, things that were really challenging for you that are not challenging anymore. And see, oh, verified trust. Something is shifting. I have more peace, more ease, more love, more gratitude, whatever it might be, whatever it is you're serving and trusting. And after a while of doing this practice, it becomes unshakable trust. Your trust becomes unshakable. You know it works. Of course it does. And yeah, you might have a day or two or a week or a month when you have monkey mind and this and that, but you have unshakable trust that you're planting seeds. It's working, quote unquote, working in some ways that you may not be able to fathom. And in some ways, it's opening you up, even if in the way you're judging it, it seems like it's not working. But trust, try, it becomes unshakable trust. Yes, of course, I'm giving my heart to this. I've given my heart to this. So trust or faith, I will use that word, faith. There's a sense of faith that gets developed after a while, and a sense of confidence in yourself. I like the word confidence. Somehow, sometimes it might feel a little intellectual, and yet it can also feel embodied, a sense of, confidence in the heart. I like to point in the heart center, but a sense of confidence, like, yes, trust, confidence. So it could be that actually these different terms, these different translations, such as inspiration, for example, it can refer to the earlier, to the bright trust, like, inspiration. And then later it becomes, maybe, again, I can wax philosophical about all these terms, but maybe after a while, when it becomes unshakable trust, it's actually faith that translation works better for it. But maybe at first inspiration works better as a translation of sada. Maybe later borrowed trust, verified trust, confidence as one of the translations, and then unshakable trust or faith, just putting the cards on the table at the end. So trust is needed. It is needed. And in fact, if it wasn't for trust, we wouldn't be here right now practicing together. Because the Buddha, after his awakening, the story goes that he didn't want to teach. He didn't want to teach. He thought, oh, the Dharma is, I can't teach this. People won't get it. Why do I bother? And he was asked by his friends, the five disciples, his first five friends, no, please, please, there, Bhante, dear sir, there will be people with little dust in their eyes, who will understand, the Dhamma. So he trusted that there are people with little dust in their eyes. That, yes, there might be other people who won't understand, won't listen, won't get it, but that's okay. Trusting that there will be people with little trust in their eyes who would understand. And that's such a beautiful metaphor. Little dust. We all have dust. Little dust. Isn't that great? Doesn't say people with no dust in their eyes. Yeah, little dust. We still don't see clearly. We have confusion and delusion and, you know, all that. You know, hatred, ill will, and attachment. Yeah, yeah, little dust. But still, to see the Dhamma, to see the beauty of these teachings, the beauty of this path that can open us up in these profound ways. So thanks to his trust to have shared what he discovered, here we are. So, and of course, going even further, had he had no trust in his ability, in his own being, et cetera, et cetera. All the inner trust and faith in him actually sitting under the Bodhi tree and saying, I'm not going to get up until I'm awake. And all that trust, all that sense of confidence that really went through his own discovery. And to think that he wasn't a God figure, he was a human being just like us, the same DNA, and a human being just like us. So with the idea of trust or sadha, in this tradition, it's often invited for the triple jewel. So I want to say a little bit about that as I referred to trust in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha earlier. So what does that mean? Let's decode it a little bit, because we can take it by face value. Oh yeah, trust in Buddha, this human being that existed, trust in the Dharma, the writings and the teachings, or trust in the Sangha, the community of practitioners now and in the past. So yes, that's absolutely one way to interpret it. And yet, there is a much more profound, I would say deeper, another dimension for our hearts to open to what actually this idea of trust in the triple jewel means for us, to have a meaningful, even more meaningful personal relationship to it. So first and foremost, trust in the Buddha. In addition to the historical figure, but the Buddha within, to trust that this being right here is not broken or damaged goods or bad, that trusting that you are inherently good, you're inherently lovable, you're inherently loved, completely loved, beyond all imaginations, beyond all the ways that you judge yourself. So trusting in the Buddha nature, trusting in the goodness, in your capacity for awakening, that yes, you too, I too, it's here. And it's a trust that's above and beyond the personhood. It's trust in something that's above and beyond what you can control so much. Yes, there are things that we can do, practices, and we do our best, we do our part, we hold our end of the bargain, and trusting that the other part, something that's above and beyond what we can fathom, control, that yes, there's this goodness. So trusting, having faith, fully trusting, giving our heart to the goodness, the beauty that shines, and trust it's here, even if at times we can't see it or it gets lost, trusting that it's here. The second of the triple jewel, the Dharma, trusting in the Dharma. Yes, the amazing teachings, the Pali Canon, all of this that's passed down. Yes, this is pretty awesome. And yet, another way of relating to it, is trusting the lawful unfolding of the universe, of the world, this the lawful unfolding. It's unfolding according to laws, according to order that I don't understand. But I trust. I trust its goodness. And this is something that has been brought, the importance of this trusting, this the universe, the lawful nature of universe. We see that both in here in this practice and in so many different practices, that it's important to make that choice. Albert Einstein, my hero, one of my heroes, puts it quite beautifully, actually, that one of the most important lessons, or one of the most important decisions that we make in our lives, is to decide whether the universe is a good, whether there's goodness in the universe, whether we trust it, or whether it's neither good nor bad, that God is playing dice with the universe, is what he said, or that it's actually unfriendly, that we don't trust it. He said this is the most important decision we need to make, because if we decide that the universe, the lawful nature, that nature in its lawful way, there is not goodness in it. There's ill will, and we don't trust it. Then we use all our might, we use all our science, all our energy in order to defend ourselves, destroy it. There's a sense of distrust that comes up, and we don't revere, we don't appreciate nature, etc. If we think that the world, universe, dharma is neither filled with goodness nor ill will, but it's kind of like it's random, then he suggested that we end up kind of feeling lost, nihilistic, like whatever, what's the point, it's all random. And yet the third choice, if we have a sense of trust in the goodness, and we can choose to do that, if we have a sense of trust in the goodness of the natural laws, then we use our science, our minds, our hearts to defend it, to support it, to love it, and we actually will be happier ourselves, it turns out. There are psychological studies that point to how both personal as well as societal happiness is linked to the level of trust. Wow. Who would know that trust is related to both personal and societal happiness? And it turns out societies that are more trusting, and of course persons who are more trusting, there is more happiness, more well-being, and also there's links between kindness that can actually increase level of trust and happiness. So kindness, there's a study that suggests that it works as a link between trust and happiness. So random acts of kindness, maybe try this out. Don't take my word for it. Don't take the research of this researcher, don't take their results for it. See what happens if in some relationship, for example, or in some community, you start doing acts of kindness, random acts of kindness. to notice over time how that might shift, how that might shift the link between the happiness and the trust in between this community and this relationship. And there are also more studies about the connection between trust and oxytocin and how it modulates fear, depression. It's absolutely fascinating. Trust, giving our hearts to. So the third of the triple jewel being the Sangha, again, as I was relating to it, having this sense of trust in basic human goodness and humanity and people around you, with you, and humanity at large, that even if people are expressing their anger, frustration, and in will, that there's still common humanity. There is Buddha nature in every single being. And in fact, every time you get into a car, you're trusting in the basic goodness of humanity. There is this social trust that, okay, I'm going to stay in my lane. You're going to stay in your lane. We're going to do our best. And of course, there things could happen, but you're going to do your best. I'm going to do my best. It's kind of a sense of a trust. If there was no trust in the world, nothing would ever happen, get done. So much more I can say about that, but time is short. So as a practice, trust can serve in so many ways. It can serve us in so many ways. And I invite you to explore and discover it for yourself. And one way that it can show up is as an antidote to anxiety, fear, and worry. And the practice could be trusting that it's okay. So if in this moment anxiety arises, having a sense of perhaps spaciousness, like, actually, can I trust that it's okay? This anxiety can be here, but it can be held in a wider perspective, trusting that it's okay no matter what. It's okay. Trusting in the okayness, no matter what. Similarly with fear, which is often future-oriented. I had this experience recently. A thought came up thinking, and I felt a tightness in my chest. Ooh, ouch, what if this thing happens? Then I thought, what came up for me was, I trust that it'll be okay, no matter what. Even if this thing, awful thing happens, it'll still be okay. There's a basic okayness. And it just released the sense of, fear or worry. And in fact, awakening, nirvana, one of the translations is fearlessness. And this is the path of fearlessness, where there is no fear, no matter what happens, what is happening, like whether we deem it to be good, bad, if we take ourself out of it in a bigger sense of spaciousness and having unshakable trust that gets developed as we practice more and more and more. This sense of fearlessness, no matter what, there's nothing to fear because nothing can truly happen to you. And I'll say that it may not make sense, but there's nothing that truly can happen to you. It's all okay. You're really okay. It's all okay. And I'll drop that in as a Zen koan, which I fully believe, and I'll leave that be. And I won't try to explain it because it's not one of those things to be explained. It's to be experienced. And one last thing, you know, it's about, you said, fake it till you become it. Well, fake it till you make it, but I like to say fake it till you become it. see what happens if you bring in trust, if you bring in trust, if you practice it, if you practice it until you become it, you really become it. So what do you lay your heart upon? What do you trust? And I thank you all. I thank you for showing up in the best way you've been able to, we've been able to, showing up for ourselves, for those we love, for all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings have fearlessness. May all beings be free. Thank you so much.